It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now we examine aerial surveillance technology and other spy capabilities in our skies following the Chinese launch balloon that wandered across the continental U.S., was shot down 2 weeks ago off the coast of South Carolina. Call it with your questions about aerial surveillance, about information gathering, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Arthur Holland Michel is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Council for Ethics and International Affairs, author of Eyes in the Sky. Arthur, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Good morning. And President Biden yesterday made his first formal remarks on those three mysterious objects shot down in American airspace in recent days, saying they're likely for research, not spycraft, unlike the Chinese spy balloon shot down. How common are these unidentified flying objects?
A lot more common than we might like to think. I've studied mysterious things that operate in the airspace for years now. I started looking at drones about a decade ago. And I, unlike perhaps most people who don't have to spend their days thinking about these things, I'm aware that the skies are a lot more crowded than we think. There's all sorts of things up there, and a lot of it is there for a wide variety of reasons. And the issue is that because the airspace is so large and there are so many different people that can get, you know, their aircraft into the sky, be they balloons or drones or other kinds of things, it's hard to know what they're doing there, what the purposes are. And the sky is getting a lot more crowded as well, which is, I think, another issue that we're dealing with here.
Biden mentioned efforts like the Navy's Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force working to catalog or inventory all of the remote-controlled airborne objects. How major of a documentation lift would that be?
Part of the issue here is that there may be something that is, you know, in statistics and psychology referred to as a frequency illusion, which is that, you know, once you notice something the first time, you start noticing it a lot more. I'm sure, you know, everyone who's listening has had this experience.
Mm-hmm.
Partly, I think what's going to be happening with this task force is that they're going to be noticing things that maybe shouldn't necessarily be of interest, in addition to wising up to the fact that maybe we're being watched a lot more than we previously thought, which is absolutely a possibility. I think this balloon has also pierced our sense of security that we are the only ones that have sort of command of our skies. I think we've got to catch up to the reality that that's no longer the case.
And we heard that this week unfolding, you know, China claiming, well, in this tit for tat between the U.S. and China here, I mean, they're saying, look, you know, Chinese airspace, you Americans have been there more than 10 times since the start of 2022. Mm. And the U.S. is like, no, we have.
Yeah.
So what do you see there, even on a level among other nations as well, multilaterally?
Well, so not only has this whole incident sort of pierced our illusion that, you know, the skies are pretty empty, it's also given us a kind of candid look into this world of intelligence collection that happens among major powers, usually in secret, you know. And there's something really interesting that happens when, a country, say like the U.S., flies something over or near China. If China detects it, they'll probably keep that a secret because they don't want to show their hand. They don't want, you know, the U.S. to know that is happening. So this has kind of pulled the veil off all of that. There's a lot of secrecy that goes in both directions, and all sorts of countries are looking at each other, and we don't know who knows what and how they know it and when they found it out. So this is a really interesting opportunity to see the inner workings of what's happening sort of all the time. But it's a fair point. All major powers are constantly looking at each other, be it through the air or through cyber or through human informants. A lot of this is going on. We just don't usually know about it.
What about the advantage of using spy drones versus balloons versus satellites, the specific type of technology here?
Every aerial technology has its pros and cons. Mm-hmm. A drone is going to be very inexpensive, but it's not going to be able to fly for a very long time. A balloon is going to be a little more expensive, but still pretty cheap. It's going to be able to fly for a really long time, but you're not going to have much control necessarily over where it goes. And you might not be able to keep it over a certain specific spot on the ground for a really long time. A satellite, is very powerful, stays up there for a very long time, but it's extraordinarily expensive. And it may only revisit certain spots on the Earth, in a pretty infrequent way. Mm. So you've got to balance all of those sort of factors.
Pros and cons.
Yeah. To decide what is the optimal, it's a weird word to use for this, but optimal sort of aerial collection device for your purposes.
Arthur Holland Michelle, researcher specializing in surveillance systems and drones, these unmanned systems. Call in 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are discussing these remote-controlled aerial spy technology, the future of balloon espionage programs following the American military shooting down China's infamous spy balloon 2 weeks ago off the coast of South Carolina. Call in 800-642-1234 to talk. We have Arthur Holland Michelle, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Council for Ethics and International Affairs, stays with us. Let's bring on a call, Phil in Mount Horeb. Phil, what's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious. There seems to be something of a national debate or dissension in the ranks regarding our authority to shoot down foreign objects from countries that maybe have negative interest towards us. I don't understand this flap. I am wondering where it is coming from, and I'm hoping that your guest speaker can speak to that. We have no obligation to tolerate those objects over our airspace. Gary Powers, U2 flap, the whole thing, it's been on for decades. What's the problem?
Phil, thank you. Go ahead, Arthur.
Thanks, Phil. It's a great question. It's a little bit of a tricky one because you obviously want to have some rules around airspace because the airspace is in some regards a collective space, for things like international air travel, and scientific research. You do need to have some rules to prevent it from just being a total wild west. And that goes both ways. There have to be rules preventing, the inappropriate use of aircraft. And there also have to be rules preventing the inappropriate, shooting down of objects. The reason that there is a debate around the balloon and the reason it's a particularly tricky debate is because it doesn't have any humans on board. And that makes all of the difference. If there are humans aboard, that changes the calculus. Because there aren't humans aboard, there is an argument that can be made that shooting it down is actually more dangerous than leaving it up there for a couple of reasons. One, the missiles can miss, as one of the missiles over Lake Huron did for one of these other objects that were shot down. The pieces can fall to the ground and potentially hurt people. But also it risks causing escalation, which is potentially dangerous between two major powers who are already kind of at loggerheads with each other. So that's sort of the contours of the debate. It's not quite as black and white as one might hope, because of course it is very scary when these things fly over our head.
Can we probe that a little further? Because President Biden said the U.S. is not looking for a new Cold War with China. How could a situation like this shoot down escalate?
Well, these things are very delicate. I think part of the thing about the balloon is that it is a provocation, but it is not necessarily a provocation that would go as so far as say flying a manned fighter jet or a human crewed inhabited spy plane over US airspace. But escalation, you know, goes both ways. And there's a lot of unpredictability in escalation, and the nature of escalation is such that this unpredictability feeds off of itself. So, you know, every time that there is a decision that maybe seems calculated on one side, the other side, may respond to that in a way that expands this total unpredictability. The key being, and this has been a really important point that has come out of all of this whole fiasco, is that there needs to be better communication between the United States and China about these things. There have to be open lines where, you know, people on both sides can pick up the phone and say, look, I know this is embarrassing, or this is complicated, or this is an inconvenient truth, but we need to talk about it and figure it out, instead of trading blows, you know, by just making media comments, for example, or by, you know, shooting each other's objects down out of the sky.
Are you confident in our last few moments together that communication with China will improve? I mean, we see our Secretary of State, headed into talks perhaps once again.
Yeah, I am hopeful. We have no choice but to be hopeful about these things, because the alternative is just too unbearable. And I think that this balloon incident could be a really useful learning moment. Mm. Again, it was just a balloon. There weren't any humans on board. So now we look at it, we say, okay, yeah, this could have been really, really bad. This could have gotten really, really dangerous.
We are out of time. Thank you for joining us, Arthur. No, that's okay. Arthur Holland-Michel, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Council for Ethics and International Affairs. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.